Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. We're here in the KHOI studio in beautiful downtown Ames. It's time to talk about trick or treating or treats and tricking, one or the other. We have a fine show in store for you today. KHOI is community radio. We get by with a lot of support from a lot of good people, and here's one of them.
Support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames, community-owned, community-focused since 1974, open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op.
And we do. To start off our show today, we have a important news item from the Donalana Kitchen News Department. That's a ticker tape. Take it away, Donna.
Okay. Apparently, the great pumpkin shortage is coming. The Libby's Canned Food Company says that overly wet weather near its Morton, Illinois factory cut in half this year's harvest. The quintessentially American brand, that's what we usually buy at the grocery store, in reality is a division of Nestle's, a Swiss company. However, it buys all its pumpkins from dozens of family farms located near its only packing plant. So this imminent shortage is only the latest example of changing weather patterns, that is, climate change, is affecting our food supplies. So Libby's label, if it disappears from the grocery shelves before Thanksgiving, why not make a pumpkin pie from real pumpkins, right?
What a concept.
And the thing is, pumpkins are essentially squash. So as we've talked about before, I use kabocha or what's that other buttercup squash for my pumpkins. But apparently the Libby's canned pumpkin is not actually a pumpkin. It's something called a Dickinson variety, which looks like it's oblong with pale peach-toned skins, and it is more akin to butternut squash. So don't despair if the Libby's canned pumpkin disappears from the grocery shelves. You can always make your own from either butternut, buttercup, kabocha, any of those lovely things, which you can buy now and just store until Thanksgiving. Or apparently Trader Joe's has some that are coming from Oregon. So if you have to go to Des Moines to get your canned pumpkin. But let's consider making real pumpkins this year and not particularly like jack-o'-lantern pumpkins. That's not the right one to cook a pumpkin pie out of. Those are usually kind of stringy, watery, low in flavor.
Made to hold together after you've carved them a bit.
Right. So grab a few pumpkins. We probably are a little short on squash around here, too. I know I called Jan Libby, and not related to the Libby's canned pumpkin, whom I usually buy a bunch of really wonderful squash from. And it's short supply. So we got a little rained out just like Illinois did. So get your pumpkins while you can, or squash.
So that was the pumpkin report. And why are we worried about pumpkins? Well, Halloween is just around the corner.
And then Thanksgiving. It's just like real pumpkin
season. It's coming right down the road. But it is just around the corner. The ghosts, goblins, pumpkins and frosty nights, tricks and treats. Today on the Donalana Kitchen, we'll consider some treats and tricks. Donna has some hints for an easy, spooky, kid-friendly way to decorate your Halloween house.
Well, if you remember last Thanksgiving, I had the good fortune of my 11-year-old grandson coming to visit me all the way from New Zealand. So I pulled out all the stops, and the most popular items I'm going to report again this year because they were really easy to do and they were a huge hit. So it involves carving pumpkins and dry ice. So I think I got the dry ice at Hy-Vee or something like that, but there were two versions. The indoor on the dinner table for the actual meal, you just put the dry ice in the pumpkin and sort of course, the smoke comes out. But the real hit was, you put the dry ice in a glass of water in the pumpkin.
Oh,
right?
That
makes it like, you know, poof out. But the real hit was the outdoor pumpkin. So in the glass of water, in addition to the ice, you put dish soap, liquid dish soap. And then it comes like blubbering bubbles out all over the place, you know, dribbling down. And 10 years old, 9, 8, 7, kids love it. It was a big hit.
Great. It sounds like you too can have a rabid pumpkin on your front porch. That sounds like a really easy, good idea.
Right, and I think actually if you really want to go all out for trick-or-treaters, it's, you know, if you put the pumpkins out and you kind of keep renewing the water with the dish soap or even the water with it and the dry ice, it will go on for a long, you know, you could make it go on for several hours, which would be, it could make you easily the most popular person in your neighborhood.
There you have it. There you have it. Good. Also,
cheap thrills.
This time of year, we end up with our favorite kids having access to huge piles of candy. How in the world do you let people know that, well, candy is good, but let's show a little restraint here, kids.
Oh, restraint. Well, here's what I did last year with my grandson. I let him eat his fill on Halloween evening till he felt ill, right? Good lesson there. And then the next day we had a negotiation because, of course, there was still tons of candy left. We commenced with some read the label lessons, like going, well, you know, what is this stuff really that you're ingesting? And then we had a heavy negotiation where I made some headway. I was able to, for $10, I bought his whole bag of candy. Okay.
So, you tricky
devil. Well, now, it was a tough negotiator. He pushed me for, not only did I have to give him the $10, we also had to go to, I think it was Wheatsfield, but we went to a place where they have more candy that's slightly less colored chemicals and stuff in it. So he was allowed to pick out whatever he wanted there as long as he read the labels. And the third thing I had to do was make a homemade banana bread. Mm-hmm. So that was my negotiation. But I think it produced a long-lasting effect. This year, I sent him another $10 in the mail to New Zealand, and I told him he had to spend it, you know, at a store where he could read all of the labels. So,
lots of skills all at once.
Absolutely.
And cogitating and learning things.
Right.
That's
good. And math, you know, you got to deal with the money, you know.
Good.
So those are some granny tricks that I pulled off this year again. So
good.
Well, and there was a dentist. I saw a sign in town. Maybe it's not out this year, but if you take your candy in the next day, they will buy it back. The dentist, I don't know, he wants to drive himself out of business, I guess. But, you know, he was really concerned about all this junky sugar for the children. So.
Well, especially all at once. You have to kind of pace things out here. Yeah. Sugar. Speaking of scary things for Halloween and the upcoming and the upcoming holiday season, I love sugar. I love sweet things. But here's your scary fact for the day, folks. Americans eat 22.7 teaspoons of sugar a day. And really, it's
22.7 teaspoons a day.
Now, that's not necessarily we sit there with a sugar bowl and shovel it in.
Yes.
It just happens to be in just
about everything
we eat. For instance, you'd think a piece of bologna, okay, you know, just meat. Meat wouldn't have sugar. But in processing that stuff, if you eat four slices of that, as in bread or bread and make it a sandwich, that's 1.18 teaspoons of sugar, and it wouldn't even taste sugar. The bread itself
has
much sugar. Here we go. Lucky Charms, 1 cup, 2.5 teaspoons of sugar before you do anything to it.
Before you add the sugar, right.
Yeah. And even you'd think you're doing good here. Low-fat yogurt, an 8-ounce cup, has 6.16 teaspoons of sugar in it. Why? What?
Teaspoons of sugar in
that's
yogurt.
What it says. Now, maybe there's different brands, but my goodness.
Oh, yeah, there is.
Watch out there. Watch out. Okay.
Read the labels.
Read the label. And here we go. Here's probably the winner for what you get. A can of cola. 12 ounces, 7.93 teaspoons of sugar. Think about that when you guzzle that one down, and have a fine Halloween out there, folks. Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, that's from the National Geographic, folks.
Oh, yeah, and yeah, it's from the August 2013 issue. I like to keep all the old ones and go through them later. A National Geographic, sugar, why we can't resist it. There are reasons. Sugar gives us a really nice feeling, and yeah, although
temporarily,
yeah. So, be aware of what we are eating.
Yes. Everything in moderation.
And besides those thoughts for Halloween, we have a special guest in the kitchen today. You may have seen him at the Ames Farmers Market. He's been in this community for a long time. Doc Anderson. I have known him for years as Eric, but he's Doc Anderson. His website says he's a speaker, a humorist, and an interesting person.
And that's just evidence of a misspent youth.
Oh, and that too. He is. Yes. Welcome to the kitchen.
Oh, glad to be back. You know, talking about scary things and sugar, here's something to keep in mind about our general sugar intake as Americans. The wheat that we eat today is not the wheat that we had in the 50s. The legacy wheats, like the einkorns and that, they have a much higher protein than today's wheat. Today's wheat is all carbohydrate and sugar.
Sugar. There you go.
It's not just reading the labels. It's knowing where your food comes from, and that's why local is always so much better.
Yeah. We can eat healthy.
Well, it depends on what the local food is.
Well, I at least know what it is, and that's part
know
of what
it
helps.
Is. See, you hang around farmers markets, you start to think, oh, yeah, this. Why does this taste so good? And you find out things. Anyway, Doc Anderson is here to help us think of things about treats and tricks. And
well, let me ask you
tricks.
A question.
Yes.
Do you believe in ghosts?
Believe?
I think anything is possible is how I want to put it.
So that's not really an answer.
Oh, all right. you want a definitive. You want a definitive.
Do you believe in ghosts?
Sure, yeah.
And Donna, what about you?
Well, I believe that my innate cognitive ability has limitations. So anything is possible too.
Well, you know, I don't know is a valid answer.
Yeah.
Although the best answer I've ever heard was one I read from the Marquis de Dufon, that when asked whether she believed in ghosts, her answer was no, but I'm afraid of them.
Oh, well, I'll put it in my it's not impossible category, okay?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So what is it about Halloween? Why do we like to scare ourselves? It seems like a lot of this stuff we don't understand. Maybe we'll never understand it. But
and why are ghosts scary anyway?
Yeah,
are they?
Yeah.
Well, they're not always. It really depends on the culture. You know, I've been in Native sweat lodges where you know, a big part of that is your experience with your ancestors and spirits. And this is not a scary thing at all. Spirits are regarded differently in different cultures.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
Our view of ghosts actually dates back to a very, very specific period of history in the mid-1800s.
So that's pre-Casper the Ghost then?
Yeah. Although we really don't know when he passed on. It could have been, you know, any time.
Sorry.
We just know when it was televised.
That's true.
Well, yes. So tell us, what is it about the 1900s that
19th century 1800s.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what is it about that time in our history?
Well, this is when spiritualism really got
yes.
a hold of the country.
Yes.
And it was the 19th century equivalent of going viral. And it went at an incredible speed for the mid-19th century. What happened, it started, a lot of people trace it back to about 1848 when the Fox sisters in Hydesville, New York, started freaking their parents out, as teenage girls are wont to do when they are bored, started freaking their parents out with rappings and poppings and noises around the house. And people believed that the house was haunted. Now, some of what you read, depending on sources, talk about the parents as being, well, not the sharpest Crayolas in the picnic basket to begin with. And so anyway, the girls were causing all of these, you know, rappings and things like that.
So people would thought that they were talking to ghosts.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so this is more about hysterical adolescent girls. This is – it's like goes back to the Salem witch hunts.
Yes, yes.
People wanted to believe.
People always want to believe. And, you know, belief is a powerful thing. Very often we confuse fact and belief. A fact is something that is true whether or not we believe it. A belief is something that we trust whether or not it is true. And that in the mid-1800s, there were a number of factors that were coming in. First of all, we tend to look at the world through today's lenses, and we forget that in the mid-1800s, death was just everywhere. Infant mortality, okay? We talk about how, you know, precious children are, and yes, they are in our society and have been. But did you know that it was a very common practice not that long ago, just a few hundred years ago, that you didn't name a child until they were, you know, over a year old because you didn't dare get attached because they likely wouldn't survive? Infant mortality was 21% for the white population and 35% for the black population. And this was, you know, well into the 1850s and 1900s. And then we had the Civil War that took 2% of our national population, 650,000.
And people died at home in front of you. It was very visible.
And
everyone had seen someone die, which is absolutely not common anymore.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There was the influenza epidemic of the early 1900s, World War I. Death was everywhere. There is a quote from a fraudulent spirit medium who was talking about how she did what she did. And she said, "First, I always mention a dead brother because there's always a dead brother." That was simply what this society was. Mm-hmm. Death was on everyone's mind. You read Poe. You read about the worry about the catalepsy and being buried alive and all of these stories and the gothic horror and all of that grew out of that was a result of this obsession with death. And then you couple that with the fact that, you know, this was a time when we were just beginning to apply scientific method to everything. And of course, you know, everyone knew the afterlife existed. We were a Christian nation. And so spiritualism, far from being some weird occult thing, it was an attempt to scientifically quantify questions of faith.
Well, and it was also built on, whether consciously or not, the beginnings of Halloween were based in the actual pre-Christian calendar.
Oh, yeah. Christianity has always, you know, stolen the best holidays because that was the best way to do it is, you know, we just subverted all these holidays to a Christian holiday. You can take the saints back to the early pagan gods and goddesses and all of that. It's all the same story. We just put different labels on it as we go. It's collective memory.
And Halloween was at the time of when they used to say, the veils between the worlds are the thinnest. So that meant the ghosts could come and go more easily and mix amongst the living or the spirits or, you know, that sort of thing. That's been with humanity, at least in the Western world, for a very long time.
Oh, yeah. But in America, we turned it into a business. And that's what seances and spiritualism became.
I think we turned everything into a business. What is your interest? How did you get into this field of study? I mean, I know you are an interesting person, and this is one side of you.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. When I said evidence of a misspent youth, I was not kidding. Okay. My mother was a psychic and a spirit medium. I grew up with talking boards, Ouija boards, planchettes.
Oh, me too.
I grew up with crystal balls and automatic writing and palm reading. My mom taught me to read palms. Yes, yes. Table tipping and table moving. Mm-hmm. I, you know, all of those things And I, all of these things, I lived in more than one haunted house. Okay, that was an experience. And so I grew up around all of these weird things happening. And it wasn't weird. It was just simply normal for our family. That should say a lot. But, I also grew up around carnies and horse traders and gamblers and con men and fortune tellers and all of these. So I also, I not only saw this stuff I couldn't explain, but I also saw a lot of the frauds and fakes and all of that.
The merchandising of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. And mm-hmm. so, I saw the real thing and I saw the frauds, and it gave me a very interesting perspective. And now one of the things I do is I let people play with this stuff and figure it out for themselves, and I don't – you know, I let them figure it out. I don't preach and say, oh, this is real and this is not, because – you know, it's
only real if you saw it anyway, to you.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Well, yeah. Yeah. It's good. I'm going to mention that we are listening to KHOI 89.1 FM. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Happy Halloween. Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking to Doc Anderson. Seances, fortune telling, scams, and not scams. Why we like to scare ourselves? Why we like to ask those questions about things we don't understand?
Well, Doc and I have just discovered we have some commonality in our childhoods. His mother was from southeastern Iowa,
South Central. Mm-hmm.
Near the Missouri border, and my mother was from Missouri, and my mother's family were, what's it called?
Spiritualists.
Spiritualists, which was a out-and-out denomination.
Absolutely it was, and it's still alive and well today.
Certainly in the late 1800s.
Mm, that was the heyday.
Yeah. Yeah, and it obviously hung over in Missouri and southern Iowa for longer than that. So Doc was distinguishing between the fraudulent
mediums, and then there were a lot of people that were simply they were very sincere in their beliefs and talking to spirits, and in many cases, especially in the Midwest, so many of these women, well, first of all,
it's the women. Here we get to the witches.
No, actually, consider that this was, you know, in the early to mid-1900s and even later, women had very, very little self-determination in society because of the patriarchal bent of American society, and that this was a way for them to have control of their lives and their finances, their destiny. They could actually have a business, a living of their own. And so that it was a way out for many women. That didn't, you know, otherwise they wouldn't have had. Also, these were in many
probably
ways
be taking in laundry.
Yeah, Exactly. But these were the cultural equivalent of the village wise women. Mm-hmm. They were taking care of people in their community with all this death around. This was one of the ways in which they helped people grieve.
Now, it was probably a valid therapeutic experience.
Absolutely it was. And yes, there were a lot of fraudulent mediums that would bilk people out of hundreds of thousands of dollars. But frauds exist in everything. Matter of fact, the interesting thing is that the people who genuinely believed in spiritualism and genuinely believe are not bothered by the fact that so many mediums were exposed as frauds, because the common belief was that, well, of course there are frauds. You cannot have a fraud unless there is something genuine for it to be a copy of. So the frauds were actually proof that it existed.
And I suppose if somebody was practicing it well, the repeat business would speak for itself.
Oh, very much. Very much. Now, some of the stories about the fraudulent mediums were fascinating. There's one story.
Oh, do tell, do tell.
Oh, there's one gal that she would go into a town and she would get a storefront and she would put a big, big black curtain, you know, about halfway up the storefront, kind of cut it down for a smaller area. And behind the curtain, she would hire the local gossip monger, the woman who knew everyone, who, you know, big standing in the community, and, you know, signed a contract with her. And she actually had someone back there who was a telegraph operator. Okay. And so what they would do is they would sit by the curtain, and this gal would be able to look out through the curtain because it's dark behind and light out in the storefront. She would see who was coming in, and she would write down who they were and what was going on. Now, the gal would put the medium would put her foot just under the edge of the curtain, and the telegraph operator with his foot, which I think was her husband, would tap out in Morse code what she was writing down. And so these people would come in, and this medium would go into her trance all the while having her foot tapped in Morse code, and give them all of this information and proof that she was in communication with the spirits. It was fabulous.
Well, I guess that built a certain amount of credibility if you
knew absolutely about the local gal was not about to expose that she was in on this, because it would destroy her credibility in the community. So willing co-conspirator.
I suppose the question is, how did she choose the right woman to impart all the local knowledge?
Go out of the farmer's market and you watch people and watch who everyone is talking to. It will take you at best 10 to 15 minutes to figure out who knows what's going on.
I guess that would be Lana and I.
See, there you go.
I don't know Morse code, though.
No. She came with her own Morse code person.
Well, actually,
that was her husband.
Yes. People, actually, when we start thinking about ghosts and things in the spirit world, we want to connect. It may be a little scary to us, but doggone it, especially if you're paying a dollar or two, you'd like something to happen. You want a connection to happen.
Well, it is entertaining.
It is entertaining.
And if you're going to go to a seance or something, and I've done seances. I do private readings and psychic readings and all this, and it's wonderfully entertaining if you take it in a healthy frame of mind. But I'm going to warn you right now, if you go to a psychic or a spirit medium or something like that and they say, I've got a message for you and it's going to, you know, and I'm going to need another $1,000 for this and more money for this and more money, if they start bleeding you for money, run. Okay, trust me, they don't have your best interest at heart.
This is kind of like the email from the Nigerian prince, right?
Oh, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. People have been working hard for easy money for generations.
Okay.
So tell us a story about a legitimate person.
Well, there was a gal in Omaha that she was never exposed as a fraud, and she said, you know, all I do is it was this little old woman who she said, you know, I help my neighbors get through. And she was the gal who would, you know, the midwife, she'd be giving them local remedies. And of course, this is before aspirin and antibiotics and all of this stuff. So, you know, the village wise woman is really what a lot of these women were. And so many of those are completely anonymous. All we have are anecdotes and stories and I remembers and things like that. What we have are the stories of the frauds that were exposed, because as with any media, if it bleeds, it leads. Mm-hmm. Anything sensational is worth a good story.
Yeah. So the the wise woman around a kitchen table would probably do a lot of good.
They would probably be a little bit non-public about it. I mean, because you don't have to go too far back, a couple, few hundred years, and you've got people being burned at the stake for doing this sort of thing.
Well, people have always been persecuted for not being like the mainstream. And, you know, fear is a powerful thing, and fear is what motivates our questions about ghosts and the afterlife. But fear is also what motivates some of our uglier things that we do to fellow human beings. So, you know, everything is a double-edged sword.
Well, Doc, do you have a comment to say about why witches are always women?
Because it was, again, I'm going to go back to the patriarchal nature of society. Mm-hmm. And women traditionally have always been closer to the land, to the cycles, to all of those things.
Life and death.
Life and death. And they deal with it on a much more practical, personal level than men ever have. You know, men are hunters, women are gatherers. Men, if you give them a task, they track it down, they hunt, they kill what they need to, they drag it back home. Women are gatherers, they go, it is about process, and it is about connected to what is going on. So they've always been much more in tune to everything going on around them, and they also tend to be much more social than men, so they help each other far, far, far more than men do. So, you know, witches in many instances were simply the women who knew something, who were learned. And this was in an age when women were very often not allowed to be schooled. So their knowledge was something men did not have access to. So it was spooky and strange because they didn't know what it was.
I want to get back to your discussion of the age of spiritualism. You said it was in the mid-1800s that it really took off, and I think of things, Charles Dickens, the ghosts that happened for the Christmas story, and thinking of dark, foggy nights in England,
etc. The ghosts of Christmas past is a fairly acceptable creature.
Yeah. Well, all kinds of ghosts, but that was an amazing time because, like you said, we were getting more scientifically astute, sort of, but we had a lot of catching up to do.
Consider that this was it was a new age of reason. In the 1860s, we had the land-grant universities that were coming in. So education was being made available to the common person. We had the Lyceum programs. We had the Chautauquas, which was the first big public education collective movement that went across the country. It was an age of scientific discoveries, new technologies. We had all this new stuff. Electricity. There's this weird stuff we don't see, but it does stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, now we know what it is, or we think we do. But it was this invisible thing, and so it was just as fantastic as ghosts. There was also a religious revival. It was the third great awakening of Christianity, that spiritualism was not at odds with Christianity. It was an attempt to quantify and explain faith. Now, you also put into that the social order was being drastically changed. The Homestead Act, which was moving people around. There was the huge immigration. So we had all these stories from other cultures that were coming in and influencing the way that we looked at all of these questions.
And stories
human.
Being
Story,
cultural reflections
yes.
of where the people came from.
Absolutely. Plus there was a
Belief
lot of social
systems.
Mobility.
Uh-huh.
Now add into that and we come again to women, the suffrage movement, the temperance movement. All of these women that were now beginning to have access to education and a voice. And so they were contributing things. And so the social order was being changed. It was a time of huge change. So people were open to change and, well, it could be. What if? The Quakers were at the heart of several social movements. And so there was a lot of overlap between the early spiritualists and the suffrage movement, the temperance movement, the Quaker. These were the social movements of the day. So, you know, all of these things, our society was in such a wonderful time of upheaval and possibility.
So did we have to wait for the commercialized Casper the Ghost version of Ghost to think of a ghost as a guy with a sheet on? Is that what people always saw?
No, a lot of it came out of the different types of seances. Now, seances actually changed over time, and at first the seances were rapping, and you would hear ghosts rap, and the mediums would ask questions of the ghosts, and you'd hear, you know, rapping for answers. Well, it wasn't long after that that someone actually advertised that they could get ghosts to materialize during a seance. And
marketing.
Yes. And you know, magic lanterns, the early still projectors, were just new technology at that point. This had never been seen before. But you know, in these seances, once spirit mediums started doing materialization, suddenly spirit mediums everywhere were doing materializations, you know. Oddly enough, so there were fads within spiritualist movements, and these things would flow around. There were report seances where ghosts would cause things to appear. Now imagine for a moment that you're in a seance in the middle of winter, okay, and this is in the early 1900s, late 1800s, okay, in the middle of winter, and in the dark, in the middle of the seance table. A ghost, a medium, causes a fresh rose to appear in the middle of a table. A parent who has a daughter who has died, a child, which, you know.
Everyone had one, apparently.
Yes. And that there was a gift from the spirit of a fresh rose in the middle of winter. I mean, now, okay, we can get pumpkins from Oregon, right?
Okay. Yeah.
We can do that now. Then things were not shipped globally and nationally, so the appearance of a fresh rose, oh, that took a lot
of
doing.
How are they getting the roses?
There are multiple methods.
People have been seeing how things for years.
Could do a lot of things, and they would go to great lengths to make these things happen. The stories are fascinating.
Oh, this is amazing. This is amazing. You're listening to KHOI. Listen to the Donalana Kitchen live on Tuesdays or anytime at khoifm.org.
1, 2, 3, 4. Well, the pink skeleton is coming out of the woods. He's coming back out of the tree.
Back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. So we've been talking about scary things for Halloween. We've been listening to the music of a band called Rainy and the Rattlesnakes. And along with being scary, think about this. The mandolin player on the recording you just heard is named Rainy Madke. She's 9 years old.
Her sister, that's just creepy.
Yeah. Her sister, Leela, again, who plays a fine bluegrass fiddle, is all of 11 years old. Yes, music from some fine kids, Rainy and the Rattlesnakes. And that was a
original tune by them called The Pink Skeleton. The Pink Skeleton. Yes,
it
is.
I love it.
Okay, we're back here talking to Doc Anderson here on the Donalana Kitchen.
Okay, so Doc has this this little brochure. It says, your future is in the palm of your hands. And he is available for readings and describe it, Doc.
Oh, I do psychic readings, palm readings. I do card readings. Yeah, they're wonderful ways to kind of look at your world from a different perspective. And one of the things I do, one of the most fun things I do is I do what I call my psychic Tupperware parties.
Now, how nice.
Yeah, you know how.
No Tupperware involved,
well,
right?
Yeah, exactly. A Tupperware party is simply an excuse to get together and with some friends and enjoy yourself. And everyone takes home some Tupperware and things like that. But everyone feels obligated to buy something, right? And that's always kind of a downer. But what I do is I provide an excuse for a party. Everyone gets together and we play with pendulums and we play with palm reading and stuff. And there's group activities and we all get to play with some of these different, you know, quote unquote psychic things.
And they're all kind of old timey traditional methodologies.
Yes. And so you get to try these out. And
it does say readings for entertainment purposes.
A free reading. You know, or everyone gets a private reading, and what I do is, you know, everyone, I've got a good karma bowl, and everyone gives me something for, you know, for the entertainment value. I don't charge for what I do with those, not for the psychic parties, but I do all of this stuff, and I do ongoing psychic readings for folks and things like that.
Can you give us an example, like? Tell me about my lifeline.
Okay. I'm going to look at your palm here, and I'm going to close caption this a little bit. Now, my mom always said that our hands are the tools that we use to interact with the world.
Okay? Absolutely.
Yes, and you know that anytime you use a tool, that tool gets marked by whatever medium you're using it on. Okay? Saws get dull, hammers get nicks, those kinds of
knives,
things.
Knives,
right?
Yes. I use a lot of knives.
Exactly. Well, our hands bear the marks of the work that we do with them. And so they become kind of a living record of our journey through life. Mm-hmm. Now, everyone thinks about the lines of the hand. Now, if you look at your hand and the line that moves across the hand sideways, up by the fingers, that is your heart line, okay? That tells you that's about how we feel, okay? Now, your heart line has a nice curve up into the hand here, and it stops between the first and second finger, the fingers of Jupiter and Saturn. Now, this tells me that you are not a real closed-off person. You've got some balance, but you're not one of these people that just is so out there you annoy everyone around you, okay?
Oh, thank heavens.
And now,
they wouldn't let us on the radio then.
Exactly. Well, there you go. And now if you go down from there, okay, the second line that goes across the palm, that is your head line. That talks about how we think. Now, the line that goes from the middle of the hand between the thumb and the first finger and arcs down around the mount of Venus, down around the base of the thumb, that is your lifeline. And contrary to popular belief, the lifeline does not tell you how long you're going to live. Rather, it tells you how you live, okay?
Oh, okay.
And this shows the amount of energy that you have as you go through life. Now, yours has a nice, broad sweep, okay?
See, I always thought I was going to live a rich, old, long life, right?
Well, yeah, yours wraps around your wrist three times, vanishes under your watch band. So it's you can tell I don't take this stuff real serious. It's a lot of fun, okay? There's a lot of things we can see in it. But everyone thinks about the lines, right?
Mm-hmm.
But think of the lines as kind of like the roads on a map.
Mm-hmm.
And on any journey, the road is how you get there. But the interesting part is the landscape that it goes through. Okay, and now you see your hand every day. You don't see it, you know, you don't see it when you look at it.
Yeah, I don't look at the lines.
I am a stranger, so I see all kinds of cool things as I'm taking this trip. Mm-hmm. Okay, now you are a fairly open person. You are generous. I'm looking at your thumb here. Did you know there is a form of chironomy, hand reading, in India that
only uses the
thumb?
Oh!
That represents the self. Now, you tend to be a very, very generous person. You're very outgoing. You're not closed off. You're not, you know... You're very open, and you take a look at the thumb, the phalanges of the thumb. That you have got a pretty good willpower. Your second phalange is a little bit larger. You also, okay, I'm going to say this on the radio here, and you cannot see the look that I'm probably about to get, but you are a fairly stubborn person.
Stubborn. Yes, I've been told that before. Yes, as I say, I have a lot of opinions, and I hold to them strongly.
Exactly.
Determined. It's also called determined.
Yes, yes. And but you know, our hands can say so much about us. You know, doctors look at the hand and they see health, and they look at the mm-hmm, nails. Mm-hmm. These are simply looking at the factors that reflect what we do. And if you know how to read things, it's like,
you know,
reading
it's, a trail. I mean, like as you're doing my hand, I'm looking at your hand, and you have the fingers of what's called a sensitive.
Yes, yes, I have yeah. You know, an artist's hand. That's a
you
very long
see it.
Palm.
Yeah.
Long fingers. Now your palm, and by the way, your dominant hand is it shows who we are that we project to the world. Our non-dominant hand is who we are on the inside that we don't let people see. Okay. Now you've got a fairly rich internal life and some things that you just generally don't share with people because
I do shut my mouth occasionally, right? If need be.
I mean, it's fascinating stuff. It is a lot of fun.
What about Lana?
Oh, well, yeah. We'll do Lana later because I have other questions I want to
ask. Okay. Okay,
I'm going to be here after the show closes, okay. I think, doing palm readings for everyone in the station here. So,
yes.
Come on down.
Oh,
join the party.
Good.
In the spirit of the season, you mentioned earlier that you grew up in some haunted houses. Tell me about living in a haunted house. Oh,
the lights flicker.
Pardon me. Yeah, go ahead.
We had a house. It was in Des Moines, and I was very, very young. We had a record player. Some of your audience may remember record players. You know, they were things that weren't CDs that had grooves in them, and you had to turn them over.
Large round.
Yeah,
things.
Exactly.
Yes.
And they later became vases. And yeah, Lana's going, okay, I remember that craft. Anyway, so we would have a record player that would turn on. You know, the arm would be back on the rest, and the record would start, the arm would go on to the records and start playing when no one was around. We had pots and pans that ended up in different places in the kitchen that no matter where we put them, they seemed to end up in the same place and nobody moved them. The dog would watch things go across the room that weren't there.
You sure it wasn't a mouse?
No. We're sitting there, and the dog would just suddenly track something going across the room that was not there, you know. And it just little things happened all the time.
So it wasn't a malevolent ghost.
Yeah, very often they're not. And here's the thing that everyone needs to keep in mind is that, you know, if there are such things as spirits, and I'm going to let people have their own opinions on those as I have mine, but remember that nothing in this world will do you harm with no reason.
With no reason.
Even people. Just sometimes we don't know what the reasons are.
Well, that's true.
That's true. I think it's good to be open to a lot of different things. And it doesn't say that if I ran across one of these ghosts, I wouldn't probably let out a big shriek myself. But like I said, I'm open to this stuff. It sounds good to me.
Well, let me ask you something. You know, let's say I'm going to give you a different perspective on this. Let's say that you go out walking on a nature trail, okay, out in the mountains. And so you're out walking, and it's this beautiful mountain area. And so you call out, hey, just to hear your voice out in the, you know, it's me. Okay, I got to go. And you walk off. Now, Donna comes along later, and let's say it's a huge, huge area. And so she's walking along. You're gone. And you hear, and she hears, hey, coming back. Okay, who's there? It's me. Who are you? I gotta go. You know.
yeah, it's true.
It doesn't mean there's not logical explanations for things. It's just that we don't always know what they are. And here's the real important thing. Do we really have to know what they are to appreciate them?
No, we don't. Gildy, when sitting out here in the front of the KHOI studios, he was mentioning, well, yeah, but we need things like the Loch Ness Monster. We want to have things like that. We want to believe.
Don't take all the magic out of the world. It would be
Don't
a very
take
boring
all the
place.
Magic.
Sometimes it's just better to enjoy the pretty colors.
I do like that. I do like that. Yes. Oh, good. And besides doing things in the spirit world, for the spirit world, connecting us up, like I said, you occasionally do kids' programs at farmers' markets and
I grew
other
up around magicians and carnies and psychics and all that. I do all of these different things. I take all this really just fascinating stuff that I have learned, and I do it for people, and we all have a great time. I've got things I do for kids that's separate from the kid things I do for grown-ups. Even the shows I do for grown-ups are still shows you're not going to mind having kids around because you never want to book entertainment you wouldn't invite to dinner. But the stuff I do that is the ESP and the psychic stuff, that is a whole different thing. You know, that's for the grown-ups. That's for the exploration. I have done psychic readings for kids. I've had grown-ups bring their kids in for a reading. And a lot of what I end up doing there is just listening to kids, because kids don't get listened to enough. Frankly, adults don't get listened to enough. And find out what they're interested in. And most of what I do is really just kind of directing people to listen to their best self and take their own best advice.
We all need to find our best self.
Oh, good.
And listen to it, right?
We do.
Good work, Doc.
Yeah.
I think so.
Absolutely.
So, Doc, give us your contact information.
Well, you can get a hold of me very easily. I have a website for all of the reading stuff. It is docesp.com. Go on over. Take a look. I've got an FAQ about psychic phenomena that, frankly, you'll find real quick how I look at this stuff. And or you can give me a call, text or call at 515-966-4377. Love to hear from you.
Great. Thank you for being with us on The Kitchen today. Good.
Gathered round the kitchen table.
Yes.
The table's shaking.
Oh, no, it's not. That's your foot.
I got that restless leg syndrome.
Okay.
We have another little news item here. A little bit of honor goes out to Stacey Hartman.
Yes, Stacey was on the program a few weeks ago talking about confinement operations and things like that. And she has recently been given the honor of an award from the Iowa Sierra Club. And Stacey's from Minburn, and we want to congratulate her. She won the award for her work with something called the Dallas County Farmers and Neighbors. She and her husband Rick founded this organization to oppose industrial hog confinements that were coming up around their home in Dallas County, and to inform the public about how these confinements do, quote, harm the environment, human health, quality of life, property values, and rural economies. So congratulations to Stacey for winning this award. She certainly deserves having her work brought to the public attention.
Good for you. So have a dandy Halloween weekend this weekend. I know that Thursday, Friday, Saturday, little biggers will be out.
Yes.
Yeah, all different kinds. And surprisingly, we are spending more and more on Halloween. I have a little note here from the National Retail Federation that says we spend, believe it or not, almost $2 billion on decorations and costumes for this holiday, and almost $2 billion on candy. Be careful out there, folks. And get this, $550 million on costumes for our pets. Yes.
Oh, no. You could just go down in the basement or rifle through your closets and make your own.
I know. I don't
for
know.
Free.
I don't know. Maybe.
With a little lipstick put here and there and some.
Your dogs would put up with lipstick. Oh, you've got very nice dogs.
I've heard lipstick
good,
on a
good,
pig.
Good.
But that's
That's a good costume,
you draw
too.
Clown mouth, good. Clown nose.
Speaking of scary things, clowns, it's, yeah.
'Tis the season.
So scare yourself.
And right, so in Ames, it's not on the 31st. It's on the 30th. I have to grouse a little bit about this. I don't know why we have to, you know, when I was a child, Halloween was October 31st, no matter what day it came on.
Spreading out the opportunity to.
It's okay. If you're lucky enough to live in Cambridge, Collins, Colo, Huxley, Kelly, Sheldahl, or Slater, you can have it on the real Halloween, which is now and always October 31st.
Have a good time out there. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen with special guest Doc Anderson. We've been listening to music by Rainey and the Rattlesnakes. I'm Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Rick Morrison. Watch that sugar intake out there, folks. Eat
good
food.
And do go to a seance over the weekend.
Eat good food and enjoy life.